Hey folks, you're on the Insecurity Project. Today I get to interview one of my clients who's just been through the Unhindered experience, and it's a lovely thing to get to do because to invite you into the journey and to watch what's happened and hear what's happened. And this is the privilege I get all day, every day, of being invited into people's world to see lasting change and remarkable change. So these conversations are sacred whenever I interview anyone. So if you're listening, do so with all your love and all your respect. You won't help but be able to try on Jennifer's story to your own. And that's kind of the point, because her certainty gives you permission to be certain, just like my permission gave her permission to be certain. So thanks, Jennifer, for being willing to share your story, and really looking forward to diving into what's happened for you over the last 6 months.
Yeah, pleasure. Lovely to be here.
Righto, we'll share as much or as little as you're comfortable with, but what I'm most interested in is, why it was that you knew you were ready for change in the first place. I'll bring you back to these questions, but just to frame it at the start, I want to know where you got stuck along the way, because everyone does. This is harder and scarier than people imagine, and it's always a journey into fear and pain and angst. I'd love for you to unpack the mechanics of what actually changed, what facilitated lasting change, and how you know it's real, how you know that this is different and not just a short-term experience of happiness that, eventually you go back to how things were before. So paint a picture at the start around why it was that you knew things had to change and you were ready to reach out for help.
I think there was a few sort of layers to that. It wasn't just one thing. It was a few years ago with the breakdown of my marriage, and I had heard you on the radio, and so I was in crisis mode. And so I just the thought came to me, what about the 1 minute coach? And then I did a bit of Googling, found your podcast, and my marriage was breaking down in the midst of these lockdowns. And so there was nowhere to go. There was nowhere to get away from each other. There was kids to homeschool, and I'd had a very difficult situation with my mother during COVID, with her taking up with a man who turned out to be a stalker. And I was pretty burnt out at that point. And so I spent a lot of time out walking, listening to your podcast. And there was a lot that was going on in my own life, and I would just keep coming back every time an episode would come out. I read Leverage. I think that was actually the main one that I read when that came out. I took myself away for a weekend and I listened to the audio book. And it was just always in the back of my mind. But I guess there just wasn't enough there. There wasn't enough trigger stacking yet to make me actually book a call with you until last Christmas, and tensions with my mother were rising, and she banned me from Christmas because I had actually expressed really what I wanted to express at that point, and there was a big backlash on that. And at that point I thought, well, what's going on here? I'm 45 and my mother's banning me from Christmas. There's something really wrong with this picture. And I could see sort of the humor in it, but I also knew that something had to give. And I think it's just, Christmas is always that melting pot where, things just reach that boiling point. And that's when I got on your website and I was like, Dad, I'm booking a call with him. Something's got to give here. So, and at that stage, I was still looking very much outward. So, my mother was a problem. My ex-husband was a problem. Everyone else was a problem but me in this situation. And how I know that this is lasting change is that I have certainty in knowing that I was and am and will probably always be. No, I will definitely always be the biggest problem in my own life, but I'm also the greatest solution in my own life. And now that I've actually gone into the cave, examined, come out the other side, and that now I just continually remind myself, well, that was a choice you made. If you want to change it, you can. And if you don't, then don't. but just be aware of why you're doing it. And now my mother is not a problem in my life, only if I let her be, and the same with everyone else.
All right, great. Thank you for sharing that. So, what was your biggest surprise around, long time listener, first time caller, all right, I'm re ready for a change process, read the books, understand the idea. Now I'm ready to have this applied to me. What was not as you expected or different than you expected when you actually dived into the process?
Because I what was as expected was a lot of what you were saying to me, but what I didn't expect it was what you were saying to me. So it's very different when you listen and you listen and you'll read and you do this stuff, and then you think you're very literate. And I took pride in how literate I was in your message, only to realize when I was held in the space that it's different. There's no substitute for having that real time feedback. And some of it was hilarious, like, and others really made me think. And I went through a whole roller coaster of emotions, and until, yeah, I got through to the other side. I think there's just no substitute.
The last podcast I did with Amity, we talked about the student trap as being big mistakes, and it's kind of what you described. And we talked about that early on, that being so literate, yep, I understand, yep, I've heard you talk about this with others, and you can't solve the problem as a student. And so there comes a point where understanding is one thing, but then there's the application. Well, if you really understand, this demands something of you, and that's going to be hard. So the watching you wrestle with the having the right answer as opposed to surrendering to that knowledge and facing the fear, it was a very big step and pretty confronting at times. Like, we had some difficult conversations, some offensive conversations. I love you got offended at me like numerous times. I really found that it's hilarious because of the things you get to say in the coaching frame that you can't say anywhere else. It's just, there's no possible way. But holding that clean space, refusing to be anything other than a servant for you to get more of what you want, and therefore being able to tell you the truth that these are the things in the way. I thought you said you wanted this, but you're hanging on to that, and that's in direct opposition of what you said you want. I don't care, by the way, but you're not telling the truth, and you're hiding in plain sight, and you're getting in your own way. And I loved your ability to handle, like, you'd get offended and handle it at the same time. You'd laugh and cry simultaneously. What was that like? Like the harsh blows of the honesty. How did that feel? And how did you handle it? How did you not run away when it got confronting?
Yeah, not gonna lie, I was smarting for a bit, but I think I knew deep down that the biggest change always comes from when you've been pushed to your limit. And I know that from my experience and other things. I know when I was riding horses, excuse me, there would be times when the instructor would push and push and push, and I just really wanted to scream at them and tell them to F off. And then all of a sudden something would change. And you'd be like, aha, that clicked. Okay. If you just had have let me go, oh, you're tired. That's all right. You can just go back. Then nothing would have happened. And of course, the greatest change came immediately after the greatest offense that was dealt to me. And I think that in the end, I realized, I knew deep down that this is just what had to be, that if you just said, it's okay, but that's cool. That's cool. Yeah, that's cool. And then I just would have come out the other end. Nothing would have really changed. I would have been like, Jamin, gee, like, But I think I just knew that that's the way I had to be handled, that I had to be kept on my toes. And yeah, some of it was really funny, some of it really hurt, but that's when it all changed.
And it's a risky business because I don't take any pleasure in increasing pain, but do take it as a great privilege to get to speak the truth, not the need to speak the truth, but to be invited to speak the truth. Like at the retreat, there was a as you got called out in a group. You said, Jaron, I'd love a chance to tell my story and share what's going on for me. And you were, 30 seconds in, and I was watching you. I was watching how excited you were telling your story, and I pulled you up and said, you loved telling that story. You are still attached to it. It's still working for you. You enjoy the role of being victim inside your story and what it gives you. And so you were too eager to want to tell that story. Did you notice that? It's a very confronting thing to say. And the only way I can get away with it is just because you believe me when I say I'm here to get you more of what you want. And this thing here is a blind spot. You are holding on to the thing you say you are ready to give away. But you handled that. You received that. I cannot argue. That is the truth. You're right. It's not holding on to me. I'm holding on to it. And it is still working for me to be disempowered, to have someone to blame, to be a victim in some way. There you go.
Oh yeah, that was actually that was brilliant because I do remember that, and I remember I'm saying I know the exact moment where because others were saying I'm not quite certain where in my past something happened, and me just being the perfect student, I knew, and then I got to be the show pony, and I could feel your laser beam eyes on me. But I was too busy giving my performance. And then when you like you enjoyed that like in front of everyone. Yeah. And then when we went for break and I came out and said, actually, yeah, I did enjoy that. I'll own it. I'll own it. I think I don't know. Like I try not to take myself too seriously, and laughter is just the best way of diffusing it. And I do loads of stupid things and I think they're pretty funny. If I just continued to take myself too seriously, that like that's nothing's gonna change. There were other things you said to me, like when I said I'm gonna take myself out for a picnic and I'm gonna apologize to myself like officially, and I thought, gold star, like this is great. And then you were like, okay, but weird. And then I laughed. I was like, actually, yeah, that is pretty weird. Like, I just, I needed someone to really help pull me out of that student trap because I knew that I could give all the right answers. Like even at the retreat, it was a bit of a joke that where you would ask a question and people would be like, Jennifer, like, what's the answer? And, obviously that's something that I've relished in my life. It's not something I've ever had insecurity about, and yet that was the thing that was actually stopping me from getting to the core.
Because it was your cleverest strategy to not be found out. So, do you want to just explain that? Why you were so committed to the student strategy, how that had served you so well over the years?
Yes, so the student strategy, at some point, I must have realized that I was maybe a bit cleverer than most of my peers. And I could use that to deflect any shortcomings. So, where I wasn't good at one thing, oh, but I'm good at this. And then I would make that be the thing that would stand out. That would be the thing that people would remember about me. And it was something that I could get praise from my parents for, because that was particularly my dad, something that he really values. And so it just meant a lot to me. And, the primary reason why I went back to university was not to graduate as a midwife, but to purely prove to myself that I was as smart as I thought I was. And then, but I was in my 20s, right? So that was all good and well. And yeah, it worked for me. It worked for me a lot in life that I could outsmart them. But it just worked.
And hence, there was no insecurity there because it worked so well. So, when people tell me they're not insecure, all I hear is they've found a domain where they're in very low risk of being rejected or failed because they're good at it. So, no one even thinks to look at it. So, But it's all a compensation for the thing you've accused
Yeah.
yourself of being in the first place. So, those of you who've those of you who've heard any of my stuff know my insistence on going back to the beginning as the only source of the change journey. And specifically, insecurity is, a fear that your own worst opinion of yourself will be confirmed by the world. And when you look closely at that opinion, it's always accusatory. So, what did you discover about the worst thing you accused yourself of?
Well, I think the overarching was, worthlessness, but, primarily not being wanted by my parents, due to the circumstances of my conception, and being told as much when I was a little girl. And so when your mum says to you in a moment of bitterness towards, her ex-husband, that he didn't think you were yours, he didn't want you, and that basically the marriage disintegrated after that, that I took that to mean that, I had personally ruined their marriage, and that, well, these people who are supposed to, even you can't articulate it as a child, but even as a child, you know that your parents are the people who are supposed to love you most in the world. And if they feel that way, then there's not a lot of places to go from there. And so that was, yeah, not undesirable, worthless, but I was clever, so we can deal and we can maneuver our way out of
Yeah.
this.
And that's the thing. As soon as you accuse yourself, you have to compensate. You have to go, right, well, now I know this is the truth. I have to make sure no one else ever knows this is the truth. So I'll be the opposite and I'll perform and I'll fit in and I'll do what I can. So, like, it felt to me one of the key shifts for you, and probably pretty predictable that shifts for everybody, is when you understand that it's a game. It seemed like you went, there were a few moments where you understood the game conceptually, and then you didn't like the game, and then you kind of went, hang on a minute, I can see that this is a beautiful game, and then you moved into liking the game. So, yeah, that seemed really apparent to me. Can you recall any of the key shifts in terms of your experience with treating it like a game and how that made a difference?
Definitely. So the visualization of a board game was what came to mind for me. And I was thinking about the game of life, like the actual game, the game of life, and how, you'll roll the dice and you move along, and then you'll be like, you get married and you do this and you do that. And it's kind of similar, well, in a way, in real life, in that you're born and roll of the dice, you get the wonderful parents, or you got the abusive parents, or or whatever in between. But no matter what you roll, there's going to come a point where there's a square that, even if you roll it a six and you're two squares away from it, you have to land on that square, that you do not pass go, and everyone will land on that square, and that is the square when something happens that shocks, surprises, embarrasses, upsets you, and that you will then turn that on yourself and make that personal and accuse yourself of something.
And that was a game changer. And I've used that exact metaphor since you explained that to me. I think, yeah, that's a brilliant way of describing it. You can't avoid it. Even perfect parents don't prevent their children landing on that square. And you wouldn't want to, even if you could, because it's the setup for the game. So, all right, that was a big shift. And then, so you've got the accusation. Like, there are very clear milestones along the way that I'm always tracking. Name the fear. Do you know exactly what you're afraid of? Sure. Have you framed it in terms of a specific accusation? So that's as you can't get any more precise than describing it in that way. You accused yourself of being worthless. Great. Now, do you know when you did that? Can you see the moment in time when that happened? Because that's really useful. No, people think they can't find that. That doesn't exist. It's too vague. I don't have a good memory of my childhood, but I'm convinced that data is so precise because your whole world exists off that foundational idea set in place in that moment. So, So tick, 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 you've got, what you're afraid of. You've seen it as an accusation. You've understood that happened in, in a specific moment in your childhood, conversation with your mother. And then it's the process of, okay, now I know all that, but it still feels true. And my whole life has been an experience of not being wanted and trying to be wanted and never feeling the people I want to want me as much as I want them to want me. And it's hard. So, all the knowledge, yes, good. This is a thinking exercise, a thinking exercise, a thinking exercise up until you got to go do something with that. And you got to go back and be wrong about that and review it. So, talk us through what actually enabled you to get past just thinking about it to then rescuing yourself, going back into that accusation and changing your mind about that.
Yeah, so that was a massive hurdle, and I remember saying to you, like, in order to go into the cave, like, I feel like I need to be in an altered state. I was desperate for you to invite me to do some mushrooms, and thinking that would be the problem solver. And I knew it had to be a visceral thing. I knew that I can think and think and think about things forever, and I thought my way to the entrance of the cave, and I was like,
For those who are
okay,
not
like,
familiar with the cave metaphor, what do you mean by the cave?
so the cave where all of the darkness that we feel inside of ourselves hides, and but without examination, you don't really know what's in there or what's not in there even. So, we talked, and I'd, diligently done my work every week, and I had done all the things that, I thought I needed to do. And then I was like, right, okay, well, but I know all that, yes, but it still feels true. And then I would sort of go around in circles, but I'm like, but I can't just make myself. I could say, all right, well, now we believe that we're worthwhile. No. It doesn't, like, it doesn't work like that. And I was waiting for something, and it came, out of you pushing me, and essentially saying, well, you asked me to be here, and I'm here for you, and yet you're still clinging to these beliefs. And of course, my response was not a pretty one. There was things coming out there, and way more than what I expressed in text messages or voice messages even. And like, there was, it was like, I have hard to describe. I don't know, like a creature coming out from the deep and lashing out at everyone, and all the wrong things that people had done to me. And then, because I remember saying to you, and I think this sort of really fits into my student trap issue, when you told me that I'd bowed out, like, with what I had done, by still holding on to these beliefs, that basically I was wasting your time and I was wasting my time. Oh, yeah, yeah.
You didn't get
And
hung
then
up on though. I have hung up on someone before when they gave a bit more of their angst toward me. They blame me. They're like, they said, it's like you're Mr. Miyagi and I'm Daniel-san and I'm saying, show me the way, and you're just saying bloody wax on, wax off. It's like you're not helping. Tell me what to do. Tell me what to do. And I said, I have told you what to do. I have. You haven't done the thing I've told you. No. Yes, I have. And so just the blame. You're the reason why I'm not changing. No, I'm not. And then just going, I'm done here. Like you cannot say that. You are wasting my time. You are hanging on to the thing you said you're ready to change. I don't care. I know the way without getting in the way. We're done. Goodbye. And you're like, well, you don't know what a person's going to do there, because can you handle that truth? That is the truth. I know that's the truth. Very difficult to handle that. It's so much easier to be able to blame someone or something else for your troubles. So hard to take responsibility for you being the one that's hanging on. And yet that's the gift, that's the confrontation. If you're willing to handle that, the moment you can see, oh my goodness, it's me, I am the villain in the story, then I could also be the hero, and then you rescue yourself. So yeah, I love that it was so hard and horrible and offensive, and yet you didn't run away from that. And I can handle it. Like I don't, it doesn't worry me. It doesn't offend me. I don't take it personally. You can say whatever you like. I know what's true and what's not true. I know that I'm not letting you down. I know that I haven't withheld some vital piece of information because I've been there myself. I know how to get there. So yeah, I can show you how to get there, but it involves you changing your mind about the worst thing you ever decided was true about you, and you can't go past that square either.
No.
So until you're ready, you'll stay there and stay there and stay there. And so I cut you off. Carry on. So then what?
Yeah, it was when I wrote that I wrote a message back to you saying I didn't realize I was doing so badly, you know, or so poorly, and had the emoji with like the wide eyes, like, you know, and
Didn't realize I was such a bad student. I thought I was a good
yeah, well,
student.
that's right. That's a student thing, right? Like,
Yeah.
I'm failing at this thing, and I was like, but tell me how, and because I love how, right? That's easy for me. You tell me how, and I'll do it. And so I had to sit in that despair, and you know, I wasn't sure what was going to happen next. I wasn't sure if you were going to dump me. I bombed out of this, and where would that leave me? And then I just, over the course of a couple of days, I just went inward. And, you know, I was in a valley of despair, and I went and sat out on the front porch. Don't normally sit out there. It wasn't a warm day or anything. And, you know, my daughter, my 15-year-old, just happened to come out there. She must have seen me, and she sat next to me. And I looked at this tote box. You know, we're in the middle of renovations, stuff just gets shoved everywhere. And I thought to myself, gosh, I must take that back inside. And then I opened it up and I saw there was the in pieces, the scrapbook that my mother had made for me when I turned 25. And I picked up the pieces, and it was in pieces because it had been taken apart for my 30th birthday to create a wall display. And 15 years later, it still hasn't been put back together. So there you go. And I just started looking through it. And we start ended up starting at the back, and so it was me, you know, in my 20s, and going through all the things, and we're going backwards and backwards and backwards, and that wasn't intentional. I just the way it landed on my lap, and there were pictures of me, and there's one in particular, my kinder photo, my 4-year-old kinder photo, and I had the scowl on my face, so typical. And I said to my daughter, you know, everyone thought that I was an angry kid, but I was actually just sad. I was just sad that my parents had split up. I really missed my dad. And then I came across a photo which I don't remember seeing before, but obviously I have seen it before. And there was something about that photo of me, something about my expression that really struck me. And it was just a visceral experience, and I looked at her and I thought, I love her. Like, how could I think anything ill of her? There's nothing about her that's worthless. There's nothing about her that is not wantable or desirable. There's none of that. And then I'm looking at it closely, I'm like, but she's me, and those are my eyes, and I still have those same eyes, and that's still my same nose. And you know, looking at all these things, and there was just a shift. And from there, I started to build upon that. And remembering, there's something at the retreat that you said that really stuck with me. And it was about your own experience, and it wasn't about mine, but it was, you know, when you were feeling like you might let us down, and then when you said, you know, have you forgotten who you are? And that's where I started to build it back up again. And that's where, you know, I would look at that photo, and I still look at that photo. And you know, she's brilliant. Like, you know, she's you know, talking to my parents about, you know, what was I like as a kid, and you know, I get playful, determined, you know, cuddly, like all of these things. And I just think there's no indictment there. I understand why I indicted myself. I couldn't have done anything different. in that moment that my mother said that to me. There was that was going to happen. Something was going to happen at some point. And that's okay. And that's what's meant to happen. And now, this is what's meant to happen. And now is the time for this.
Yeah, and I remember hearing that, like leaving you in the pit of despair, knowing that despair doesn't disqualify the hero; it is a qualifier. All heroes must go through despair, where they go, "I can't do this," but then you realise, but giving up doesn't make it easier. Like there's nowhere else to be. Well, I'm going in to have a look, and I either die or I come out the other side transformed. And so, for you to have resigned yourself to the fact that you were going to have a look, and you didn't even know how you were going to have a look, and that openness creates the opportunity, and then the serendipity of the box and your daughter, and it's like, oh, yeah, there you go. And all you had to do was look. That's all anyone ever has to do. You just have to have a look. People don't want to have a look because of the fear of what they will see. They fear that they will confirm their worst suspicion. But no one ever has, no one ever will. It's a misunderstanding. How could you possibly know who you were at 2 or 3 or 4? And no one survives the square that says you're going to get lost and confused. That's how the game works. So yeah, it's stunning. It was stunning to watch, and I could feel the shift from you. The next message, the next text, the next response is like, oh, okay, something has profoundly shifted there. And so what did you notice there? Like, I often talk about the pressure test being the thing that happens. You betrayed yourself for so long by assuming that you were worthless, and now you've changed your mind. So that little girl who's been held captive by that accusation, wants to know you're serious. This isn't just a one-off, special moment where you're willing to deeply love and accept her, that you'll do this continually moving forward. So what did you notice about the testing of that new language, the new story, in the following days after you'd made that observation?
I remember I'd send something to you and I didn't get a response and then I sent a follow-up a few days later and I said, did you get one? Because technical glitches happen, right? It's happened before. And you said yes, but you didn't want to respond right away because we didn't want it to be you weren't going to give me a ticker tape parade or anything like that. And you said, how did I feel? And I was like, yeah, no, I felt okay. I just figured you were busy or there was a technical glitch or something. I think in my personal life, the thing that has helped to solidify this is to say to myself, have you forgotten who you are? And that's a pretty blunt question to ask yourself, as opposed to saying, don't forget who you are now, don't forget. It's like, have you forgotten who you are? And you're like, oh no, I haven't. No, I just got sidetracked. And then I go, all right. And then that brings me a sense of calm when I say, have you forgotten? No, I have not. I've just been distracted by something or there are well-worn paths, and I know that there's going to be some instinctual reactions to things that have been in place for a long, long time because they're there to protect me. And now they don't need to protect me, and I just need to kindly ask them to step down. That's not necessary. I've got this. Like, it's in, and just the same way as I have my children's backs, and I'm in their corner. I'm in my corner. I have my own back, and that is the best feeling of all, to know.
And I believe you. Like, I hear it. Every time I test it, and I tested it by withholding my praise. Like, in your biggest moment, to give you no praise is like, do I get a tick now? Like, surely someone's going to celebrate. I've done the thing. Well, what happens if I don't praise you? Will you praise you? Do you know what's happened? Because that's the thing. And so yeah, I know what's happened. Even if no one else in the world know, I know, and I will never forget it. I've got me. But yeah, stunning and
I
real.
did hear that boy Slim at Chemist Warehouse and a bit of praise you and couldn't help but dance along a little bit going through the aisles. But I think that the thing that came to mind recently is I thought my way to the entrance of the cave, but I had to feel my way through it and into it. I couldn't just say, right, and now I've got great self-esteem. Look at all those things I see on Instagram, how they say, I'm wonderful and I've got this and I'm all of these things. And that is sort of like a faux attempt at the cave. You're kind of looking, but you're not really seeing. You actually have to go into the dark and feel your way around. And
Yeah, thank you for drawing attention to that. You're right. The way I describe it is trying to rescue the child from a distance. So you're saying disassociated, and often people have become disassociated with their own pain as a way of surviving. But you must associate, you must go back into the horror of the betrayal, and there's no other word for it. You accused, you betrayed, you have locked you out, you have separated from yourself, you are the villain, you are the bully, you have created your own suffering, you are exacerbating it by holding on to the thing that you said about you. So yeah, there's some mess to clean up, there's some pain, there's some collateral damage. And yet the child's not there waiting with a stick to beat you, and there is no way of avoiding it. And it is a central component of the game that we all get lost and confused, and that doesn't disqualify you. That's the setup. So it's in doing the thing that you can't do that you prove to yourself how lovely and wonderful and strong and creative that you really are. It's the ultimate test. Oh, one of the things that I addressed for you a number of times when you got stuck was the tendency to focus on problems downstream. So it's like, what's this going to mean for my marriage? What's this going to mean for my relationship with my mum? What's this going to mean for my parenting? What's this going to mean for my job? What's this going to mean for my finances? All the pressure points, all the pain points, you're like, ah, like they're all the real things that have to change in my world. And I continue to pull you back into they will do what they're going to do. There's only one problem to solve here. There's only one, that is you. You have betrayed you. And are you ready to be wrong about your accusation yet? And when you resolve that, then you'll know what to do down here. It'll be obvious here. But if you pay attention to here, you'll be too frightened for what the potential costs will be, and you'll never do the thing. So that landed for you, it seemed. Do you remember a moment when you kind of went, yeah, you're right. There is no escaping. There's only one problem to solve here, and that is in my relationship with myself.
Yes, so I was very I think they were diversions, those concerns, and they were there because it was all just a bit too scary. But then in actual fact, it just all of a sudden became very simple and straightforward, and to realize that it doesn't what because remember, I was really stuck on change, that I couldn't say that I had overcome my insecurity until I had pushed through a divorce. I had done all these big things that I couldn't legitimately say that I had changed until I'd done that. And then when you said to me, you are the queen of your own kingdom, you can do whatever the hell you like. It can look however you want. That's not the issue that we're trying to solve. And I was like, okay. So shift the focus off that, that this is just purely about me and my relationship with myself and what I've accused myself of. And that hurt. It really hurt. I really hurt myself in that process. But that is the way the game works. And to not beat myself up for that and just to be in awareness. And then that's when I was like, there really is only one problem to solve here. Everything else will take care of itself. Those are just diversions. That's all. But the queen is that really resonated with me.
It's so good because one of the key structures of kingdoms is the king and queen have arbitrary rules, whatever. It's their kingdom. They can have it however they like. If you want to have a terrible marriage, well, great. That's what you want in your kingdom. This is how we work. We have abusive marriages. Oh, great. Cool. We eat dirt. Oh, cool. We have no money. That's how we want it in this kingdom. Really? Yeah. Okay, great. Well, then have it how you want it. Just as long as it is how you want, and you're the king, well, then there's no right or wrong. It's arbitrary. So yeah, I remember that shift for you. Another thing that I remember, which I have used also of yours, was you were excited about the idea that you got to play this game again, that this wasn't a game you only ever got to play once.
Oh yes.
You want to explain that you're thinking around that?
There's just something exciting when you bring yourself from, that place of despair or neediness or longing, and then you've got the tools to bring yourself out of it. And I was like, this is amazing. I can play this over and over again in all these different areas. I can go, so I really always struggled with that area. All right, what can I do? Now I've got a strategy to examine it and work through a process. And that's great. Like, who wouldn't want that in their life? Who wouldn't want to be able to help themselves in that way? And the feeling of overcoming that and working through that process and going, brilliant. That feels amazing. And I get to do it over and over again because stuff is just going to keep cropping up, but I've got an edge here.
Yeah, brilliant. Because sometimes I find people go, "Oh, good, I've done that. It's work. I've done the necessary evil. Now my life's going to be fine." And they miss the fun in it. It's like, no. The you will get confused again. You will get lost again. You will forget who you are. And it's in the remembering where all the fun is. So,
It's just like, it's no fun if you're only stayed on level one of Mario.
yep.
You need to, and each level that I just always think of the little tune in my head, that each level you go up, yes, it's more challenging, but then when you overcome it, you're like, well, all the skills that I learned from levels one, two, and three, I can now apply to level four, and how good does it feel to level up?
Yeah, how good does it feel? And especially when you watch yourself become the solution to your challenges, and every time you prove yourself that you're stronger and smarter than you thought you were before. So, yeah, I love the idea that the game aim of the game is to be unhindered at your current level of growth. And as soon as you are, your world gets bigger and more complex, and you face challenges that you would never have handled. You wouldn't have invited them into your world at the last level. And so you'll bang your head on the next limiting belief and the next misunderstanding about you. One thing I was really keen to ask you about is I remember early on in our conversations, you'd had mountaintop and valley, deep mountain high, sorry, deep valley, high mountain, almost in a similar period in your life, a very, very spiritual experience in your life, but a very chaotic experience in your life. So your whole world deconstructed is like you saw through the matrix. You could see the wonder of reality, and yet it terrified you, and there was no way you could function in the real world with all that awareness. And so you shut it down and stopped being spiritual, and went back to just roles and relationships and structure. And one of your fears was, I can't access spirituality without inviting chaos into my life. I can't be human and spiritual at the same time. So I'm really curious as to what's shifted, if anything has shifted in your mindset around that. Do you see now it's possible to be human and spiritual at the same time without floating off into the world, into the cosmos, and not being able to function in the real world?
Yeah, absolutely. So, just obviously have a background in Christianity, like yourself, and went to a Christian school.
Not sure that was obvious for anyone. I don't think.
So,
But thank you for telling us. Now it's obvious that you've told us, but it wasn't obvious before that.
no. So, from the time I was born, raised in the church, went to a Christian school, and never really questioned any of that stuff. I wouldn't say I was devout, but I accepted it all at face value. And then after having my third child, I became very stressed because my second child was very ill. And, combining that with being postpartum and juggling everything, I reached breaking point. And my mind's way of coping was to step out of reality, and it went beyond anxiety and depression. It went into derealization, depersonalization. So I felt like I was out of my body. I spent months, just touching the void. Nothing made sense to me anymore. I contemplated everything. I would think about time, money, like everything. They were in hyper focus, and it was terrifying because everything I thought I knew suddenly made no sense to me anymore. What is God? What is it? How have I believed that story about Noah? Like, as if, like, and all of these things came to the fore, all whilst I was still trying to function as a parent and, be a wife and be all of these other things. But in my mind, I was really somewhere else. And I remember one night, because what sort of brought me to breaking point is I didn't sleep for 4 days and I just couldn't. And so I, at one point, I was lying in bed and I woke my husband up and I just said to him, and I said to him in all seriousness, "What if we're all in the matrix?" And in his sort of stupor, he just said, "Oh, so what if we are going back to sleep?" But for me, it was very real. And what is reality? What is a body? And I would even sit there sometimes and I'd be talking to someone and I would look like I was engaged. But in my mind, I would say, "Did you know you're in a body?" And then I would just get this visceral feeling throughout me. It was just like this, and I'd be like, "Oh my God, I'm in a body. I'm in a body." And then because, I've seen internal anatomy in my work, then I was getting freaked out by the fact that I had internal anatomy and I couldn't touch my kids because they have internal anatomy. I could touch their hair, that was okay, but I couldn't touch anything else. And it became very obsessive. I felt like everywhere I walked, I was leaving shadows of myself, like people could see shadows. I would call to make an appointment, and as I would pull the phone away, I would say, "Okay, that was 36 seconds. That was 36 seconds of my life that I won't get back." And I felt like saying to the receptionist, "Thank you for spending 36 seconds of your life with me." I went to the shopping center and I had the urge to say to everybody, "Excuse me, I just like your attention. Did you all know you're going to die someday? Did you actually know that?" I didn't do it. I
Yeah,
didn't do
it's so incredible. And every
it.
time you shared those things with me, I was like, yeah, yep, that makes perfect sense. Yes, that is exactly how I feel. Yes, I see those exact same things. Yes, they are realities that are alternate than how people think and feel. But your experience of them first time was chaos because they had no structure. You had no human structure to survive in it. And so then it was like, well, that's dangerous chaos. If I surrender into that, if I even examine that, I'll die. And so you shut it down completely. So,
Good
how are you
point.
feeling around touching the void again, around examining reality, around understanding, cosmic thinking and opening your heart to spirituality now that you know who you are again?
There is still a little bit of nervousness, a bit of tentativeness around it. However, I know that it's okay, that this is all of this has existed, well before my time and will exist after my time. And it's all okay. The fact that we're on a planet in space is okay. It's okay. And I've got me, and if I remember who I am, then I'll be okay. And I
Yeah.
brought myself back before without any structure, so I can do it with structure.
And this is like, I'm convinced psychedelics belong. You were hoping I'd offer you a mushroom trip, and it is something that I do on the down low. But it belongs for this very reason, because when you've got the safety of I know who I am, then you can have an intense and short experience into that, and knowing that you're coming back out of it in 3 hours. But to see that from a position of internal safety is life-changing. There's no other way to describe it. I'm sure everyone, you must see behind the curtain. You must see what's on the other side. You must see, you see such a limited view of reality being inside the body. But to get outside yourself and have a look at what you can see from behind, from up there, from down there, like it's an incredible thing. And it changes so much about what you value and what you understand and what you cling to. But it's very dangerous if you don't have a safe place to handle that from, and it can break a person, and it can be too much, and there's nothing, you don't know what to do with it, but it belongs. And you know, I'm convinced in the game of life that rule five, everything is spiritual. Like, you can't quantify life logically, rationally. You can't hold it, you can't squeeze it, you can't cut each of us up and find the piece of us that is actually alive. More than the sum of our parts, we're connected in ways that we can't quantify, but we can experience. So the job is to work at how to be human first, then include and transcend that into spirituality. So it'll be fun to watch what happens, what opens up for you, what becomes safe, what you can surrender into. And
yeah, and I remember at the retreat too, where we talked about faith and how, you know, when you're in a religious world, it's all about faith in God and none about faith in yourself. And that struck me too, and that wasn't something I'd heard you speak about before. And I think as having that past experience with the church, that really resonated with me too, and which goes back to having my own back as well, come what may.
Yeah, well, it's extraordinary when you start examining the limitation of story. Alan Watts, I love his stuff. And one thing I've been thinking about from him lately, he's like, most people think of themselves as like a marble in a box, in a room, in a house, in a city, in a country, in a, you know, they're a tiny part of a massive, that they are in the universe. He says, what if the universe is in you? You are a container for the universe. And the universe is looking out through your eyes, experiencing itself through you. So it's a very, very different way of experiencing it. And you know, Alan always says things like, the great misunderstanding is that you forgot that you were God. Like you are the soul. You are. You've been looking out there everywhere, but you are. It's here. And so, discovering that, the more you break through the misunderstandings and illusions of the limits of your own storytelling in the past, you keep finding more and more wonderful things about what it means to be alive, what it means to be you, what it means to be Jennifer and not Jennifer, what it means to be Jamin. I am Jamin and I'm not Jamin. Like how could I be Jamin? Jamin's a word to describe a history and a family and some behaviors. I'm not Jamin. Like, that's ridiculous. So
you're you.
I'm me, and I'm describing the indescribable. So I'll never not get another opportunity to see more wonderful things about what it means to be alive. And that's the fun of it.
Absolutely. I think that just, you know, trying to pray my way out of situations, which is what I did do back then, you know, I had family praying over me, but I quickly came to realize that I couldn't pray my way out of it. But I didn't know. I knew I couldn't pray my way out of it, but I didn't know what I could do instead. So I didn't have, you know, the flip side of that coin, which just basically left me to battle through and to use just sheer determination.
Well, and it strikes me that typically this is categorized as a magic or a mythic problem. So it's an abstract problem. It's a fear problem. It's a past problem. It's, you know, it's a curse. I'm impacted by the way the world has shaped me, influenced me, spoken to me, hurt me. I can't see it, touch it. I can't be precise about where it happened. There's no way of touching anything that can change it. So it's happening to me. I'm impacted by it at kind of at a cosmic level. So then, of course, you must reach for cosmic solutions. Like, I need a magic solution. I need God. I need, you know, substances. I need hypnosis. I need a miracle to get, that's the only thing that'll work. But when you turn the lights on and see that you're at the core of your own problem, you accused and agreed, then you're like, there you go. I don't need a magic solution after all. There's enough magic in here. I use magic against myself. I can use magic to set myself free.
Yeah, the greatest problem and the biggest problem and the greatest solution.
Absolutely.
All rolled into one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Package deal.
What have you noticed within yourself? What's been the lingering experience in the last couple of weeks since this major breakthrough? What is it like to wake up in the morning and be in this body, in these relationships, in your own skin? What does it feel like now?
More peaceful it doesn't mean that things don't happen to, unbalance me, but I know that it'll be okay and that I've got the resources within me to deal with whatever happens. Doesn't mean it will be easy, but when something comes up, I just center myself and, have you forgotten who you are? No, I have not. Okay, then what do we need to do?
When
And
you know who you
to
are, then you know what to do.
exactly. So, that's where I made peace with my current situation, but I didn't just make peace out of resignation. I made peace with saying, actually, this works for me right now. And why does it work for me? It works for me for this, and this reason. Okay, well then, if you're going to complain about it, to yourself, well then let's not forget how it works for us, and that if we're doing something that we know doesn't completely work for us, we're doing it with full awareness that it's meeting these needs or it's for this reason. And I think it's just that gentle accountability that then brings peace, that brings me back to myself to go, yep, okay, all right, we're putting up with that. We're putting up with that because this other thing works for us. Yep, cool. All right. Well, we're not doing it blindly. We're not doing it because we're trapped. We're not doing it because we believe we're worthless and therefore have no other options. We're doing this as a strategy to meet these needs, to do this and do that. And there are, of course, practical things in life as well. So that's just brought that peace. I don't have that same angst of, feeling like I just want to whinge and complain about all these things and I'm trapped and there's nothing I can do about this. And but yeah, okay, all right. Well, that was frustrating. I hear you. However, we have decided that this is what we're going to do right now, and we can change it at any point in time. However, we do realize that there's going to be fallout from that. And okay, all right. Well, look, we'll stick with this plan for the moment, with the full knowledge of why we're doing it, and just take, be responsible for that. And then go, okay, cool, let's move forward.
So that's a lovely answer, rather than oh, everything's perfect and there's no problems. I love Mark Manson's take on that, that happiness is not the absence of problems, as most people fantasize. It's in the solving of problems. And so you come resourced. Now you're like, yeah, there's problems and I've got myself. I know that I'm okay. I know who I am. And so I work it out. That's, and I watch myself work it out and it's fulfilling and meaningful. And I earn higher quality problems. And keep moving forward. So, yeah, you have your own back. You are your own safety. You are the queen. Speaking about being the
Yep,
queen,
got my ring.
I love the idea of anchoring. You go, yep, to signal to yourself first and foremost, and to the others, yeah, I've got this, and here is the proof. Here is a moment in time where I'm like, yeah, this has changed for me. I won't forget who I am ever again.
No, and I loved how, you said, you could be whatever type of queen you want to be. And so therefore I've been able to create an avatar of the queen. And yeah, and just this is a ring that I had forgotten about. And it was sitting in my drawer. And when you said about a talisman, oh yeah, ring. And then I was like, how fitting that this was given to me by my mother. And I think that when she gave it to me, how I felt about her at that time was the reason why it got put in a drawer. I rejected it. And then when I looked at it again, I thought, that is so fitting. The dowager has passed on to me. And that is what happens. That is what's supposed to happen. She is my mother and I love her. However, she doesn't automatically get a seat at my table. DNA does not a license make. And when I feel unsettled by her behavior, her response to things, I just remind myself that I'm responsible for how I respond to her, and that this ring reminds me that I am the queen of my own kingdom. And
Incredible. The last few conversations we've had, I've like, oh, I wish I was recording this. This is such lovely stories to tell, but you've done incredibly well recalling the key moments and the key stories. And thank you so much for sharing so honestly. And yeah, really personally about your journey, and I'm sure people will find great value in that. So, anything else you want to add? Anything else
Yeah.
we've missed that you think's important for people
I
who are
think
considering something like this for themselves?
the moment has to be right, and you have to have brought yourself to a point where you can no longer stand it anymore. And if you can still stand it, then you're probably not at that point. And be prepared to be brought to more points along the way. But that is the beauty of it. And I know from engaging in therapy before that if it was just too easy, if there was nothing there for me to push up against, or no pushing up against me, then really there was no benefit to it. And I think the other thing that really helped was how our shared love of Lord of the Rings, and that really helped me a lot along the way. I would bring what was happening with myself back to that story, and there are several lines that really helped to ground me. And one of them in particular was when Gandalf and Frodo have gone into the caves, when they've all gone into the caves, and Gollum is lingering, and Frodo has that moment of extreme frustration because he didn't ask for this, just as none of us asked for the world that we were born into. We didn't ask to be conceived, we didn't ask to be born. And he says, "I wish none of this had ever happened," and Gandalf says, "But so do all who see such times, but that is not for them to decide. All that is up to them is to decide what to do with the time that is given to them." And when I would have moments of being angry with my mother, my father, my husband, or even myself, I would say, "Well, we all feel this way, and that's not the problem. The problem is, what do I do with the time that is given to me?" And that's what I have to work on, not worrying about all that stuff. I acknowledge the things that have happened to me, and I acknowledge that they hurt in that moment and that they were less than ideal. However, I am the greatest problem in my own life, and the way that I deal with what happened back then, and then I'm the greatest solution with how to move forward, given that, so do all who see such times.
Yeah, I mean, that's why those stories are so powerful, because they are modeled on the hero's journey, Joseph Campbell. This is our story. So
Yeah.
metaphor
Well,
is the language of the unconscious.
thankfully, you didn't fall into the abyss,
Thankfully,
Jamin.
I
So
did.
that's good. You're still there, because the hero does tend to something catastrophic happens to them. But yeah, thankfully you didn't go the way of Gandalf or
Yet.
Dumbledore. Yet. But you did. I felt like you were going to dump me at one point, so I did kind of see you hanging on, saying, "Run, you fools."
Jennifer, thank you. That's been lovely. I really
No
appreciate
problem.
you sharing this, and yeah, we'll leave it there.
Sounds good.